The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Good morning, and you're on the Deadline Report with Ben Vidge Investigates, care of Fresh FM, the greatest little radio station in the whole Southern Hemisphere. We are going to go today and get straight into it, and I'm going to be talking to you about science. I'm always slightly bemused by people who I find that actually often haven't gone to university. It will kind of view this almost like this, you feel of them like their attitude towards science, and people in white coat is, oh my God, they're the holy priests that cannot be challenged, and oh no, they are all sacred. And really, is once you actually, you know, anybody who's actually been in academia after a while kind of goes, well, that's not how it works. Or at least they should have honesty, because the reality is there are different brands of science. And we're going to talk about some of these brands today. And I'm going to go back to about the brand of science I had. So I grew up as Generation X, and we grew up in the 1980s. And we had this group of people out there in New Zealand called the Department of Scientific Industrial Research, DSIRR. Now, generally speaking, these gentlemen would, and they were predominantly gentlemen, I have to admit, the times of the times, would turn up, and they would turn up in their white coats. And they were as boring as hell. But as an overall interpretation from New Zealanders, we largely trusted people of DSIR to give us a neutral, apolitical, scientific result, which would tell you the good, the bad, all the probabilities, and basically lay it out for us, because that's what they were paid to do. Now, the DSIR, as a general rule of thumb, were normally paid about 20% above the going rate. And that was designed to make sure that there wasn't a brain drain, so they kept all the talent, but also stopped them from being potentially poached by other corporations or other governments or whatever. So we had this amazing body of scientists. Now, along this thing came along called Rogernomics in the 1980s, largely begun at places like Victoria, Waikato University. Basically, it was referred to by Jane Kelsey as the New Zealand experiment. And this would be later transported by meaningful communications experts. That's a euphemism for spin doctors, and policy analysts and policy advisors, which are basically people that are taught to say yes. And they were exported from New Zealand and literally handpicked, Jacinda Ardern being one of them. And she went to work for the Tony Blair government, selling what they called the Third Way, which was the English version of Rogernomics, which was also sold in the United States via Bill Clinton. And, you know, and it was described probably quite accurately as that Bill Clinton, with his charm, managed to sell right-wing politics to the left and gave the right nowhere else to go but to become insane, which when you look at, you know, what the Democrats are now, what the Republicans are, that's probably a fairly good analogy. Now, about this time, we started privatizing everything and all coming up with the concept of public-private partnerships. And the DSIR was one of those people that actually were, you know, again, impacted and affected by this. And so they were now expected to actually not just make science and give the best non-political agenda, they were expected increasingly to come up with actually to turn and make a profit. And this started changing also the way that the political pressure was, that the political politicians stopped looking at scientists as being a group of people that were there to kind of give them specialist advice. But they then became, oh, how can we use these people to make money? Oh, we need to get into all these. And thus you had things like Peter Hodgson from the Labour Party getting Otago University involved, basically in doing stuff for the Chinese, I think it was basically the Chinese secret police, but it was helping them analyze suspects, or which could, you know, we would call it suspects, other people would call them dissidents. And we started getting involved in this like stuff, which is maybe a bit ethically dubious. At the same time, as funding became harder and harder throughout the universities in New Zealand, more and more it became increasingly about what your relationship was with different pharmaceutical companies or bioengineering firms. And you have people like Peter Gluckman appearing in the scene, a very successful salesman of science, but not necessarily a scientist. In the UK, around about this time, you were seeing satire come up, things like Heartland. And again, there's even Bob Jones's book, Degrees for Everybody. This book kind of went into this whole issue of, again, about what was happening was we were seeing that neoliberalism had moved on from capturing people, turning Labour's policies from a Labour left-wing government into a government that socially was still promoting itself as being left-wing. Well, that's what the charm of Bill Clinton's all about. But while economically it was actually very, very much right wing. And what we're seeing was that, you know, fringe academia that actually was very cheap but actually offered no real value suddenly became very important, and there were lots of sort of stringing out of very obscure liberal arts. But things like critical thinking and political analysts and actually encouragement of being dissidents or questioning the system, they became pushed down further and further in academia. And that also included the science. And so a good example of this, which everyone, well, two examples of this, which everyone likes to forget, one is political and one is practical, but they both relate to the subject of 1080. So a lot of people that have gone to university in the early 90s after degrees have been brought in and basically the university has been purged from the working class influence, sort of tend to look at things from a very myopic middle class viewpoint. And this became the kind of concept that, oh no, 1080, it's a terrible thing about 1080, but it's the only thing that stops the birds. Well, that was all based on scientific surveys, which basically came after the DSIR had been privatized, and people had actually been quite critical of the survey methods that were used to say whether or not 1080 was successful or not, were largely finding themselves currently unemployed. And we started on the other side of it, the political ramifications, was we had Rod Donaldson. Rod Donaldson, who was very famous because he was part of the Green Party when the Green Party actually had some mana and they actually behaved in the way that made even their political opponents say, well, you can say many things about the Green, but you can't fault their character nature. Unfortunately, I don't think you can say that about the modern Green Party today. Again, they've basically suffered from this neoliberal influence where when it comes to things talking about genetic modification or the relationship with pharmaceutical, even we leave some of their mining protests. I mean, they're very good at protesting against coal because that's opposed to climate change. And I'm not saying one thing or another about it. I'm just saying what it is. But oddly, I don't see a lot of Green people turning up to anti-Sam's Creek mines or really being that concerned that when we're mining for stuff in the seabeds, it's a lip service. And it's been there ever since the Green Party stepped down from Rod Donaldson and Jeanette Fitzsimmons and was taken over by James Shaw, who is a public relations, as I said, two public relations is another note word for spin doctor, who previously worked for a very long list of companies with terrible environmental records, terrible human rights records, including Bayer, who later became Bayer Monsanto. Literally, the head of the Green Party went on to be for a company that basically became what joined at the hip with Monsanto. Tells you everything you need to know. Back, however, to Rod Donald. Rod Donald made the point, and I used to talk to Rod quite often, probably about two or three times a year while we're on planes traveling backwards and forwards. And he said, you know, we're not going to actually be able to actually come about with pest-free eradication. We need to look on a policy of containment, but more importantly, we need to be careful about mission creep. And the idea that we're comfortable with the use of pesticides is a dangerous position for us to be in, because then it starts to kind of give this idea that all things chemical and made out of, you know, pharmaceutical industry is good for us, which without careful testing is not the case. And as we've seen again, like when we look at the current GMO bill now, right now it's been upheld, and they said, oh, it's technical, it's complicated. No, it's not really. The reality is that in 2008, we had a moratorium on GMO because we still didn't know what the long-term consequences. If it had been the DSIR, you know, this was the last vestige of the DSIR holding on, saying, well, okay, this might do all these amazing things, feed the earth, do all these things, but it could also have some really terrible consequences, and we need to study it further. So we had this moratorium, which caused some seeds of distrust. We actually found out that there were illegal GMO tests taking place at University of Otago, where basically, not the University of Otago, sorry, Lincoln University, where the thinking was the profit was more important than the actual long-term consequences. So really, the scientific ethics were being thrown out the window. And not to mention the fact that I've got a file on a whole bunch of, that's another story. But the point was, we found out that actually they were carrying out illegal GMO experiments at the University of Lincoln, and they bloody well knew it. And our government even sanctioned us. And again, this is a sort of idea of Labour being quite comfortable going, oh, it's all about the profit. And, you know, it's having sided up with things like Michael Fay and Fay Richwhite. It all became about, oh, money is more important and we can justify it. Technology will come up with the solutions and we just get it out there. And however, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and some of the documents that people involved in this said about what they have said about science once the TPA gets passed through and what that does in terms of regulatory bodies overseas and the ability to be science to be subjugated by lobbying groups. But we'll take a bit of a break, and in the meantime, we're going to go with Oingo Boingo, Weird Science. You're on the Deadline Report with Fresh FM, and today we're talking about science. When the TPPA was passed, well, before the TPPA was passed, Mark Christie, who represents DuPont, and he represents a board of ag board or something, some lobby group of farmers, and he makes this remark that when the TPPA gets passed through, we'll start, you know, people start seeing, you know, having to listen to science. The context, of course, is what he's actually talking about is he'll have to start talking to corporatized science. And so, again, you know, what we're seeing with the GMO bill car passing through right now, and they say, oh, it's been delayed because it's complicated. Not really. It's because basically when you turn around and start looking what the long-term consequences are of GMO, we don't know. We don't know what the impact is. There is no, there been no long-term study. What we are, however, being pushed into is a model where what will happen in terms of GMOs and increasing additives in other foods, and in fact, anything that results in something being added to our food, water, or sauce, because we'll get to that in a second about Codex Alimentus in a second. But the idea will be that This will be increasingly overseen by regulatory bodies in the European, United States, or Australia. And its idea is that, well, if it's good enough for the regulatory bodies, it's been good enough for us. But what we have seen in Europe, for example, is that it's been recognized that the massive amounts of money that pharmaceuticals and corporations are spending on lobby groups is actually basically not getting science. What it's getting is it's the idea that we can rush things out onto the production floor and they can make money. And the idea is, because this is how it works, is that research and development costs a lot of money. And when you want to make a profit, you want to kind of get things out quickly as possible to recoup your research and development costs. And so obviously corporations' primary goal is to maximize profit. So they put a lot of pressure to actually make the process as quickly and efficient as possible, or to quote unquote fast track it. We all know about fast tracking. Fast tracking is like, don't worry about it. Yeah, she'll be right, mate. And of course, thalidomide has been one consequence of this idea that we don't need to worry about long-term consequences. Smoking, the impact of what smoking, where upon some time you could go to Much Awake and look up the picture for the tobacco growers or the doctor a smoking cigarette, the doctor's the healthy choice. Obviously, we are realizing the fossil fuels are actually having, you know what? You think after all this idea, the idea that one level we've got people telling us that, oh no, climate change. And then another idea that we've got a Green Party that seems to be increasingly okay with GMO. And the key thing was, again, was that, you know, back in the 1980s, when the DSIR were giving us these wonderfully grey characters in white suits that we could rely on not to be influenced by corporations or politicians, they were saying, well, actually, no, we don't know what the long-term consequences are. And our government turned around and was caught doing it anyway, because, and that's the other aspect of it, was so much of what we get told is science by the politicians. It's not about science. It's about them again saying, oh, we can monetize this. We can monetize academia. And then the end result is we don't actually have any room out there to actually percolate and ponder. Everything has to be done reactionary. And the consequence, of course, is with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, is that if we let this take place, that we turn around and we let some product be used upon us, once it's used upon us and we suddenly discover that, oh my God, this actually could actually have a very detrimental effect to us, the legislation from things such as the investment state settlement dispute clauses could turn around and actually have those corporations in a tribunal which is dominated by corporate interests saying, tough luck. You can't rescind it. You're getting away with our profit, and we now have the right to sue you. So this is what Mark Christie is talking about when the TPA gets passed. We'll start getting our science, because the reality is, once we get something out there and onto the from the laboratory to the consumer, we can't reel it back. This kind of the argument was basically what they're telling us is they're going to be their science. During the situation of COVID, which of course is a very still causes triggers for people in a lot of areas, and I'm not out to say whether you took it or didn't take it, the vaccine, it's not an issue. I'm not attacking anyone for their personal decisions. But what I will say is that we were led to believe that what was being unleashed upon us had been checked out thoroughly by science. Well, that's actually not quite the truth, because the reality is, if you go to the United States, where Donald Trump was the president and came up with warp speed, Kamala Harris was saying, I wouldn't be so keen to take the vaccine that's approved under Donald Trump's mandate, because it actually hasn't followed the usual quality controls. Now, Kamala Harris actually does work for the pharmaceutical industry, so I think she knows a little bit about what she's talking about. But of course, I could be wrong. It could turn out to be that the Labour Party and the Green Party, who love Donald Trump and they always respect him because he's known to be such a bastion of truth, could be a guy that you could really rely on. And we won't ignore the fact that at the time that he was a president, that he was trying to make Elizabeth Holmes the head of the FDA, and she didn't do that because she ended up getting basically taken away to court, and she's now in jail next to Maxwell Grizzell, because it turned out that her amazing invention that could do all this amazing diagnostics was a completely snake oil, and only got pushed through the FDA because a lot of very important political figures were on the board of directors, so they just went ahead and rubber stamped it. This is an organisation that approved and said, it's okay, we don't need to see what the long-term consequences are of this particular vaccine. We don't need to worry about the usual safety checks. We don't need to tell you what's precisely in it. Biggest world crisis since possibly ever, and we suddenly have a government that says, no, we're not going to worry about transparency or accountability, or even suggesting that these pharmaceuticals go, hey, guys, you do this one way or the other. You're just like World War II, where we can actually sicken your resources. Yeah, you get paid a fair wages, but this is a national emergency. No, no, we're going to let them have a profit, and we're not going to ask any accountability. And we're not going to ask to see what the contract for. And that's, again, all these people today that are out there, National Act in New Zealand First, begging Labor because they won't front up for the COVID inquiry. Excuse me, are you guys going to show us the contract here as well? Because otherwise it sounds like a lot of gaslighting. And you are the same people telling us, no, no, don't worry about that. You can trust the science. Meanwhile, your Dominic Cummings, chief advisor to Boris Johnson, pretty much all led a mutiny involved in SAGE, which is the Scientific Advisory Group Emergency Group, which kind of all the best scientists have come together. And half of them basically walked out because they said, well, actually, what you're doing is your response and how you're shaping the response to COVID isn't about dealing with a real crisis. The COVID, don't make a mistake, the COVID virus was a real threat. And still, pandemics are a real threat. And what we should learn from this response is that to make sure that next time, because there will be a next time, I know people don't like to hear that, but there will be. So next time, what we need to make sure is like, okay, guys, we did the COVID response where the corporations don't get any transparency and there is no accountability from them. Next time around, let's do the international body where everything is above board and we actually get to see the results, because that's what science should be about. And if you're actually saying, oh, no, no, you don't need to see the fine print, just trust us, we're the guys in the white coat, it stops being science. It becomes about worshipping characters or figures in authority and treating them like they're like Aztec gods. Yes, they know how to work the Mayan sundial color. Trust them, they know what they're doing. They won't manipulate that information. Unfortunately, the corporate history, and there are plenty of, in fact, go have a walk around the United States of America, have a look at the fentanyl victims, which is a stunning example of a pharmaceutical corporation, many of whom were involved in the COVID response, knowingly releasing a product onto the market that they knew were going to kill people, and manipulating the public relations as science in manipulating people's trust in doctors to take a medicine which has caused a massive criminal and social problem for the United States of America, and this still is to this day, and has now been spread into the Pacific and worldwide. Vaccines have largely eliminated the disease polio. However, cross-contamination and misapplication of vaccines has also resulted in some parts of Africa seeing the re-emergence of polio, while at the same time we're increasingly seeing viruses and or pathogens that are resistant to things like penicillin because of the overuse and the misuse of these particular products. At the end of the day, science is not a magical abracadabra, one-fix solution. It is something that actually requires a great deal of nuance and, as I said, a lot of transparency and a lot of accountability. And the idea that we just turn around and think that science is these lovely, lovely, lovely dumb chaps and we can trust them and don't worry, they're not influenced by politicians or corporations, is extremely very, very naive considering what we've all been through for the last 5 years. So next time we have to deal with a crisis, let's actually do listen to the science, and let's make sure we are listening to science and not to public relations experts. Also, just a little quick notification too, when you are doing your research, which is really kind of great, and I actually encourage people to do this, and the idea that people like dish people doing their own research is not only arrogant, but it's also like, actually, when I grew up, people were encouraged to go out and read books and read articles and become aware of issues. It's called being educated, in fact. However, a couple of things. Always make sure you have at least three sources. Make your sources independent from each other as much as possible. So, you know, if you've got one from a TV news network, then make another one from a radio news network. Try and make them as, you know, like the Billy Bob's Squirrels for a President party platform, probably not a great source. If you're listening to any alternative news source that happens to also have a candidate running for politics, I personally would say stay clear of them. On the other hand, you know, if you're getting sources that someone's coming from a journalist, one's actually coming from scientific bodies, one's coming from a recognised expert in that field, a good book that maybe won an award, that's three different sources that are all independent from each other. That's going to probably give you a better than average chance of coming up with some pretty good information. I also recommend that you turn around and you use, when you do your words, add in the word scholarly review or for scholarly peer review. This often will get you a lot more drastic different results. Classic example is, for example, if you go virus electromagnetic causing, in other words, what I'm trying to say is not that electromagnetic signals cause viruses, but electromagnetic virus, signals can stimulate viruses, then I would actually add in the word scholarly, because then you'll find lots and lots of that. Whereas if you don't, what you'll probably find is, again, stuff from the Billy Bob platform, which will misconstrue what's been said and say that actually the signals are causing the disease. So that's two different things altogether. And knowing the particular jargon and nuance is very important. So yeah, go and see if there's material on that's actually peer reviewed. But again, try to find your sources, go from to different universities, go from different sources. Also work out the fact that a peer review is not the same thing as a scientific journal. A lot of stuff will get cited by people arguing, oh, this is a scientific journal. And then you find that the scientific journal is actually funded by a pharmaceutical corporation. And its main job is to go and do not science, but public relations or science communications, which is, again, a euphemism for spinning science with a dollar as opposed to science with a straight S. So on those little tips for you, have a great weekend. Do check out my website, The Dyslexic Detective. Listen to the show, which you can listen to on Fresh FM by the podcast, or you can come to us at The Dyslexic Detective, postmanproductions.com. And we'll see you all next week with some, we're just working on our summer program at the moment, and we've got some amazing experts and veteran reporters and people who've got some really great, solid quality information delivered to you on an alternative news platform that has no intention of ever running for any political party ever. And happily bags the Green Party, the National Party, the New Zealand Party, the ACT Party, in fact, all political parties. Currently, my current belief is our constitution system has been smashed and has been since 1986, and then it got smashed again in 2004. So I personally find it very hard to intentionally get behind any candidate that will actually work in a system that's actually not following due process. But That's another issue, and we'll talk about the whole issue about political ethics at another time. Meanwhile, have a great weekend and take care. This is Ben Vidgen on The Deadline Report.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.